Welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is AIX Native Memory Problem Determination Techniques and Tools for WebSphere Application Server. Today's presenter is Kevin Grigorenko. Kevin is a software engineer on the WebSphere Application Server SWAT team, which provides worldwide, on-site, and remote supplemental product defect support, particularly in critical customer support situations. He focuses on problem determination for WebSphere Application Server and related stack products and operating systems, including the IBM and Oracle JVMs, AIX, Linux, Solaris, Windows, ZOS, HP UX, and iOS. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Kevin. Kevin, you may begin.
Thanks, David. Hi, everyone. If you can move to slide 2, please. So while that's moving, there it goes. I just wanted to start off with a few things. So this is the second part in a series on native memory problem determination. The first was on Windows, and I would like at some point in the future to do Linux, ZOS, Solaris as well. So look forward to those. This presentation will be pretty packed as far as content. I'll be glossing over a few things, but I wanted to include as much as possible for reference. And if you have any questions on things I might have glossed over, we'll have plenty of time in the Q&A. And also, finally, I'm a little stuffed this morning, so sorry if I sound a little weird. So the agenda for today will be first an overview of this, what we're talking about and what kind of problem this causes. We'll go over the native memory layout of AIX, how to detect native memory issues, how to monitor them. We'll spend quite a bit of time on how to isolate or avoid them. And then finally, we'll go into one mechanism to determine native memory leaks, which is provided by the AIX operating system. Slide 3, please. So native memory issues are one of the most difficult classes of problems. They have various symptoms. They can cause crashes, which are the most obvious and actually the quote-unquote best symptom. The worst symptom is when you just start to thrash your physical memory. You may see other things such as OS instability, high CPU, and practically speaking, isolation or avoiding the issue is usually easier than actually figuring it out, and I'll go over why that is. Finally, operating systems do provide some tools. They do have overhead. They are very low level, but we will go over how to use them. Slide 4, please. So I'll assume that most everyone on the call has a basic understanding of native memory, but just a few high-level concepts. When we talk about native memory, in general, we're referring to the virtual memory, and in particular of a particular address space. And each address space has a defined virtual memory that the operating system gives it when it's started. And that the size of that address space will depend on the hardware. So if it's 32-bit, 64-bit, it'll depend on the operating system. The operating system will have to carve out some of that for the kernel and other parts of the operating system or other functions. And this virtual memory, this is a limit. So once you hit this limit, the operating system can try a few things, but in general, you will not be able to continue running that program. This is different from physical memory, RAM, which is mapped. There's a mapping between virtual memory and physical memory that the operating system does. Now, the 32-bit theoretical maximum virtual native memory process size is 4 gigabytes, and we'll talk about how practically you have less than that. For 64-bit, it's practically infinite, but there are some actual limitations, and it's still important to know how native memory is laid out in 64-bit. When you're running a 32-bit process on a 64-bit operating system, your process will still have a 32-bit virtual address space. And when we talk about Java, we'll usually talk about the native heap and the Java heap. So basically, you can think of the virtual address space is what the Java process gets. Then the Java process will split that up into a Java heap, which is just another native memory allocation. But then it will also need the rest of the native memory space, and it will share that with the application, libraries, and that we call the native heap. They both come from the same place. Slide 5, please. First, we'll go over the 32-bit AX native memory layout. The way it's designed is that it's split up into 256 megabyte segments, and this is just an internal implementation detail of how it manages this 4 gigabytes, and there are 16 of them, obviously. So the first segment is always reserved for the kernel. The second segment is always reserved for the executable code. And then the rest of the segments are laid out depending on environment variables that you set or defaults. And at the bottom here, we have a picture of, and this is courtesy of Andrew Hall's wonderful article called Thanks for the Memory on IBM.com. And this just shows one of the most common native memory layouts, and I'll go over the various options, but this is the one you're probably running with. This is the hex able at DSA, and here you can see the stack starts at the third segment that will grow up. Then you have your native heap where you'll have your malloc calls. And then if you look from the right, which is you can think of as the top going down, you have shared library data, you have some mmap space, and then you have some shared library text. And then finally, your heap will grow down from segment D down. And the malloc heap will go towards the Java heap growing down. There are also other allocations in that space I'll go over. Slide 6, please. So if you aren't playing around with the AIX environment variables, IBM Java will try to choose an appropriate memory allocation model for you. And this is based on your maximum heap size. So you can go over 3 gigabytes. This is very rarely recommended because what happens is you only get one segment for malloc. This is usually, I'll talk about what goes into malloc, but that does include things like classes and class loaders. And usually this is not enough space to fit in for a common application you'll run on WAS. The next one down is if your heap is less than 3 gigabytes but more than 2.25 gigabytes. In that case, we'll actually dive down into that on the next few slides because that may be a useful thing to look at for you. And then finally, the most common is your XMEX is less than 2.25 gigabytes, and that's the one we just covered. Slide 7, please. Now, one thing I alluded to is that if you are experiencing a native out-of-memory right now and your XMX is less than 2.25 gigabytes, that means you have the able memory model. And if you don't have a leak and you just need a little bit more headroom, you can consider explicitly setting the Baker memory model. And this will increase your available native memory by approximately 400 to 600 megabytes. There are some things we'll get into on as far as the costs. What this does, if you can imagine the previous diagram where the topmost segment, FFOX, was for shared library data, then the next one down was for some mmap, and then the next one down was for shared library text. So what this memory model does, this B memory model, is that it loads shared libraries privately. And so you're still using that same space as for the two shared library segments towards the top, but that space is then able to be shared with the Java heap. And it pushes the Java heap up and therefore increases the space for malloc below. Now, obviously, if you're loading a shared library privately, that means it's no longer shared. And so if you have multiple JVMs on the same machine, then your virtual memory and to some extent, your physical memory requirements will go up by the size and usage of the shared library. So this is just something I've seen. It's not scientific. You definitely want to look at your own shared library usage. But I've seen just WAS itself is about 50 to 100 megs, so you can use that equation to approximately figure it out. And I'll go over a few techniques on how to definitively figure out how large that is. There is another cost in that when there's a common tool in AIX support called PerfPMR to diagnose performance issues on AIX, and if you are loading shared libraries privately, it doesn't have as much insight as far as things like tprof to look into what's actually happening from different perspectives. So IBM support may request that you undo this if you need to run PerfPMR. Otherwise, the change should not affect performance, assuming that you have enough physical memory to support that extra demand across processes. Slide 8, please. This is just instructions on how to set this within WAS. It's basically just an environment entry, and you have to restart. Slide 9, please. Another comment on this is that what happens is that not only, so the Java heap is allocated into native space with a operating system call named mmap, but the Java heap is not the only, the Java heap allocation is not the only thing to use mmap, so you, other things such as files may be used as far as mmapped into the space. And so what happens is if your XMX is a multiple of the segment size, which is 256 megabytes, then what can happen is that, let's say your XMX is 2 gigabytes. So that means that's 8 segments. And so you'll go down from F to 9 or 8, whatever. And then you may have other, even very tiny mmaps that are even a few bytes for some files, those will then grow down past the Java heap, so they'll take the next segment. And what happens is that malloc cannot share the same segment as mmap. And so essentially, if you're not using any more of that last segment for mmap, then you may have wasted hundreds of megabytes, quote-unquote wasted, of that segment. So one technique is that the Java heap does not have to be on a segment boundary. There's no performance benefit to that. So what you could do is you could just leave a little bit of space. First of all, you can try to, and I'll show you how to determine how much you're using of mmap other than the Java heap using svmon. And then based on that, you can essentially just give yourself some headroom, and that way you can fit all those other mmaps into that last segment, and then you can have that next segment for malloc. Slide 10, please. The 64-bit AIX native memory layout is quite different. The first segment is still the kernel. Then I've tried to, I won't go over every one of these, but you can look at the diagram on the right. But basically what you can see is that in general, for a default setup on AIX, all your program text and your malloc will start at 4 gigabytes and grow up. Then at some point you have various mmap allocations, then shared libraries, and then finally a stack all the way at the top growing down. But essentially the point to note here is that if you allocate it properly, you have unlimited space virtually. And then, obviously, you need to make sure you have enough physical memory for whatever your requirements are. Slide 11, please. Now, one thing that can happen is you think, well, I'll just switch to 64-bit. I'm having issues now. I'll switch to 64-bit. Everything will be okay. Well, if you have a leak, things may be worse, because on 32-bit, you would have just crashed. if you switch to 64-bit and you've still got a leak, well, you know, at some point, although virtual memory is basically infinite, that you physical memory is extremely finite. So it has a cost, and it's not, you know, customers aren't running with terabytes of physical memory in a box. So what happens is if you have a leak, that leak over time will consume physical memory until your physical memory is exhausted, and you'll go into your swap, and then you'll start to thrash. And thrashing is almost worse than a crash because, and thrashing is a process of paging in and out from virtual memory to physical memory and to a disk, whatever can't fit into physical memory. And this is worse because your process will essentially halt because what happens is that once you start to page out Java, even a small part of the heap, let's say, every garbage collection would have to page everything back in because it needs to look at the whole heap, well, at least for a full garbage collection. And so Java makes thrashing much worse because of its design and garbage collection, and so you'll spend almost all of your time in garbage collection. So it's very important to always monitor paging. You should rarely page, and native memory leaks are one potential cause of paging. Slide 12, please. Starting in IBM Java 6, there's an option called compress references, and what this does is essentially tries to squeeze the within the Java heap, all the references within the Java heap, squeeze them into 32-bit, well, actually, it depends, but some smaller size than 64-bit pointers. And this will almost nearly match the performance of a 64-bit process on 32-bit, at least for the Java aspect, within 5%. The memory will still be much larger, but this also reduces the memory quite a bit. Now, there are a few techniques the JVM uses based on the size of your maximum heap. One technique is just shifting, and one technique is offsetting. I won't go into the details. Starting with WAS 7, this is enabled by default if you're running on 64-bit and your heap is less than 25 gigabytes. And ideally, you would want to get everything below into the 32-bit address space. And so, you know, if you can use a XMX less than 4 gigabytes, then that will do that. But the next step to avoid offsetting would be to be less than 32 gigabytes. So it's just something to watch out for. On AIX, on power, there are some special hardware instructions that make this more efficient, so it's not going to be a huge hit. Now, the place where the JVM puts this can cause some issues where you're limited in how much native memory you can allocate. And this is just the fact that the malloc heap cannot run into the Java heap. And so depending on where on your heap size, the JVM may ask the operating system to put the heap in a place that ultimately actually limits your native memory. And so if you have that issue, you'll work with IBM support, but they will probably recommend this preferred heap-based option. And there's some more details there. Slide 13, please. Just to go over a few native allocations. So the Java heap itself is mmapped, and then the native heap, which is malloc, includes things like threads, sorry, there's a typo there, the just-in-time compiler, the class and class loader data. So for each Java class, there's an object in the Java heap, but then that's backed with native memory, JNI, direct byte buffers, type 2 database drivers, and much more. Slide 14, please. To detect a native out-of-memory error, the first thing is you will see an out-of-memory error exception that will, in general, produce a PhD heap dump. On recent versions of the IBM JVM, the default will now include a system dump on the first out-of-memory. If you continue to get native out-of-memories, you will probably want to switch to system dumps, and I'll go over that later. What you'd want to do is, in the Java core that's produced with the heap dump, at the top it should give some information on what caused the out-of-memory error. And if there's things like fail to create a thread and a few other things related to that, or basically if you don't see just a vanilla out-of-memory error, if you see some details such as that, then it's probably native out-of-memory error. Slide 15, please. Another thing you may see is that in the current thread of the Java core, you'll see that the top frame is in a native method. That usually means that it's a native out-of-memory error. The next thing is if you get a system dump on an out-of-memory error and you check the virtual memory usage and it's near its limit, then you can pretty much assume that was the cause. And finally, if you have for both GC enabled in the Java core, there's a flight recorder, and you can look for that J9 allocate indexable object line as well. Slide 16, please. The recommended way to monitor native memory is the AAX SVMon tool. I've included a little script here, the output of which can be graphed by the garbage collection and memory visualizer tool. So that would be the recommended thing to use. Slide 17, please. Go over a few details on SVMon. What it does is it will essentially give you information on all the segments and how many pages are in use virtually and in physical memory. The example output here is just the top of SVMon, which will show the second line there shows the process ID, Java, and then the number of pages in use, pinned, page space, and virtual. The values are in pages. So in the case below, you can see that there are two lines for the different page sizes used in the process. There's S for small, M for medium, and then the number of pages is broken down, and so you would just multiply, for example, the first in use is 6210, multiplied by 4 kilobytes, that's how much actual bytes are in use for that page size. Slide 18, please. Below that header, you'll see each virtual segment and some details about it. So some interesting details include the ESID, which will, in some cases, map to the actual segment, particularly in 32-bit. So in the above case, in this example, we can see this is the third segment. The page size is what you would map to that header section. In this case, there's an M, so we know that these pages are medium-sized, and so we multiply these numbers by 64 kilobytes. In some cases, you may see that page size is more than one letter, such as SM. In that case, there are different size pages in the same segment, and you need to pass. On the previous slide, there's an option that that will break down this by page size in each segment. So in use may be shared with other processes, so it's kind of, that makes it a little bit more complicated to understand exactly how much is being used by each process in physical memory. Virtual is my preferred thing to look at because ultimately virtual will show a native memory leak, and it is the thing that is actually limited. I mean, in use is a subset of virtual, and virtual does have some caveats as far as looking at it, but I find it to be the best thing to look at. Slide 19, please. Another tool you can use to monitor virtual memory in recent versions of IBM Java Health Center, which ships with the JVM, you can enable the -X Health Center option, and this will, in addition to tracking profiling and garbage collection, it can monitor native memory. One thing you can do, because there is some overhead, although it's very small for the profiling data, whereas everything else, native memory garbage collection, is very low overhead. You can set the low parameter so that you are only gathering, you're gathering everything except profiling data. And you can do this without attaching the health center agent through a socket. You can do it to a file on the local machine using the headless mode. Slide 20, please. Starting in Java 6.2.6, which is WAS 8 and above, Java cores have an extra section which breaks down native memory from the point of the JVM. So the JVM doesn't know about all native memory allocations. If you have an application or a database driver, it doesn't track those. It doesn't allocate or free those. So it doesn't know about them. But this will cover just about everything within the JVM itself, including the virtual machine, classes, direct byte buffers, things like that. This is a wonderful feature to help isolate where the issue is. Is it within the JVM itself, or is it outside the JVM? Slide 21, please. This is just a continuation of this example. Slide 22, please. Here are a few techniques to avoid a native out-of-memory error. Some of these do have costs, so they're not free as far as performance or overhead. The most obvious is just to reduce XMX. So when you reduce because if you think, you know, the basic thing to remember, to visualize about native memory is that malloc grows up and mmap grows down. Mmap is the Java heap, and so they can't run into each other. And so if you can reduce the Java heap, then you're giving malloc more space. The next is to, the rest are going to be essentially to reduce native memory usage that various functions have. So each thread will have native memory, including a stack and other things related. So if you can reduce the number of threads, then you'll be reducing the native memory. And there's a way to tell how big the stack size is. I'll go over that later. You could actually reduce the stack size itself. Just be careful here, because you could then get stack overflows. But you could optimize it. You know, if you have a lot of threads, and even if the stack size is, you know, a few hundred kilobytes, that obviously, if you have a lot of threads, that will grow quickly. If you can reduce the number of classes or class loaders by sharing classes, by using shared libraries, things like that. One common thing that you should always do for most thread pools is to set min equals max for a well-optimized system. We've definitely seen many issues with leaks in Type 2 database drivers, so it's important to always stay up to date on the fix packs. The kind of worst case is you just limit how much one JVM can do by limiting things such as thread size and, number of threads, et cetera, and then just scale horizontally. This obviously has a cost, but it's the surest way to solve native memory native memory limits. Slide 23, please. WAS and Java themselves may have native memory leaks, so always stay up to date on those. In general, you don't want to be permanently running with -x no class GC, so you'd want to check for that. If you're using a lot of reflection, the way it works is that the JVM will inflate. It has this concept of inflation, where essentially generates classes at runtime for reflection that's heavily used. So you can tweak some parameters there to reduce how many classes and class loaders are generated. There are various things around how WAS takes traffic in, AIO and channel framework. So you can look into those. Slide 24, please. A few other things, even in the current Java cores, although they don't have that detailed breakdown I showed earlier, they do have a memory section towards the top, and those are similar to the example from Java 6.2.6 in that they describe all of the JVM's internal segments. So essentially, the JVM, for all of its uses, such as classes and class loaders, will manage a set of ultimately mallocs, which are allocations that it calls segments, and then it gives those segments out to classes and threads, et cetera. And so the section that Java Core will show all of these segments, which includes things such as the JIT. It's a very high-level breakdown, but you can get a view onto how much native memory is being used by the JVM itself. Slide 25, please. So I should just mention on that last point that that is a great starting place. If you think that you might have a native out-of-memory leak, I would recommend using Java cores to take periodic Java cores and, along with SVMon, so you're tracking the overall virtual usage, and track those Java cores and essentially run that Perl script that was included at the bottom of that slide and calculate how much the JVM is using. This is a great way to see to start the process of understanding, is this a leak within Java itself? First of all, is there a leak at all using SVMon? And then second, is it within Java? There are a few other things here I won't go deeply into as far as if you think there is a leak within Java itself, there are some options here that you can use to diagnose what's growing. Slide 26, please. If you suspect a third party or your own JNI code, then there are a few options that will, this XCheck option will look for common issues in JNI code misbehaving. Slide 27, please. In the worst case, there's eyecatcher hunting, which I won't go too deep into, but you can ultimately see every malloc by looking for eyecatchers running the chain in the raw dump. And sometimes you may see, for example, database, what obviously is a database call or something like that that might be useful. Slide 28, please. For any type of advanced analysis, you need a system dump. This is an AIX core file. And the reason a PhD heap dump isn't very helpful is that a PhD heap dump is just the Java heap. It's in recent versions of the IBM JVM, to look at a dump, a system dump, you actually don't need JXtract. You don't need to run JXtract unless it's a crash. But as far as just looking at basic native structures or the Java heap itself, you can load it in just like a PhD heap dump. However, with native memory, if you're going to be looking at DBX or some advanced things, JXtract is good to have because it will gather all the libraries from that process was using. So I would recommend running JXtract. Of course, with system dumps, you need to make sure you have unlimited core U limits and some other SMIDI things that are outlined in that link to make sure that the core dump is not truncated. And there are a few things that you can do as far as JVM allocations, such as direct byte buffer analysis, that are available within the Memory Analyzer tool and the IBM extensions for that. So that'll tell you how much native memory is used by the direct byte buffers in the system dump. Slide 29, please. If you want to create a system dump on an out-of-memory error instead of PhD heap dumps, if you need to further investigate native memory, then here's the option to disable PhDs and turn on system dumps. I mentioned in 802, by default, a system dump has been added as on the first out-of-memory error in addition to PhD heap dumps. A few other options here as far as using WSAdmin to generate a system dump programmatically, and then finally the command to run JXtract at the bottom. Slide 30, please. A few other methods. Health Center, if you are attached, you can acquire a system dump. You can get system dumps on things such as method entry or exit. you can limit the ranges of that. One critical thing for performance, obviously, first you want to make sure you have enough space. So the size of the system dump will be approximately the size of the virtual address space size, not completely, but close. And so, you know, you can think of if you got a, you can add a couple hundred megabytes or more to your XMX, that'll probably be about the size of the core dump. It does compress very well, about 25% of its original size. And we found that the best performance for creating the, it's generally, it's within the same magnitude as far as producing PhD heap dumps, especially if you have a lot of additional physical memory, because then the AIX will just write it to physical memory and then write it to the file asynchronously. Slide 31, please. Next, we'll go into DBX. DBX is a tool provided by AIX, which can look at core dumps. And what you would do is unzip the, so JXtract produces a zip file, which has the core dump and the libraries. You extract that zip, and then you have to tell DBX not to use the libraries that are on the that operating system instance, but to use the libraries from the zip file. So you just use the dash P argument, and then you pass the Java executable from the zip and the core dump file. Slide 32, please. Now, the first thing to check is to run the malloc command. What this will show is how much malloc usage you have. So malloc is ultimately based on, yeah, there's a data segment within the process. There's break and S-break calls, which are kernel calls that malloc uses to increase the size of the data segment. And then malloc, so there's the this broad piece of native memory called the data segment, which is available for the malloc heap. And then malloc will break that down into, depending on the implementation of malloc, which you can change, it will break that down and it will allocate from that space, manage it. It may free, when you call free on some mallocs, that may not actually go back to the operating system. It may be pooled for future allocations. But in any case, to get the total virtual memory used by malloc, all you do is subtract initial break from current break. So, and similarly, you can look at just, you can look at the bytes held by the user row in each heap, and that'll tell you. In this case, we've got a gig. And also, this is a good place to look if you might be having native heap fragmentation issues. If you see that the bytes in the free space tree are very large, then that may be causing the native out-of-memory error. It may not be that you are having a leak, but it just may be that you've fragmented so much because of, you know, continuous allocations and frees and just the pattern, that then there's just not enough contiguous space for your allocations. Slide 33, please. So malloc is one part of the virtual native memory. The other big part is mmap, which will be the heap. And you can use the core map command. There are two parts to it. There's shared memory and mmap, and you would just look at the sizes. In this case, we can tell that the, I think that first one is the heap, just based on, we can match it to the XMX that we've used. Slide 34, please. Also, there's a good place you can run proc rlimit to make sure that, you know, in theory, you could have limited how much malloc you get by having a data ulimit. So data is the data segment, so you can actually limit how much a process can malloc using a data ulimit. So you obviously want to check for that. Other thing that can cause out-of-memory errors, although you'll usually get an error message that's related to files, but the number of files can be limited, and so that can cause allocation errors for file descriptors, and the FD command will show all of the file descriptors in the process. Slide 35, please. All right, well, finally, the tool to diagnose, the recommended tool to diagnose a native memory leak is provided by the AIX operating system. It's called malloc debug. It's just an environment variable, and if your process was started with this environment variable, AIX will essentially track each malloc and free and the stacks that produce those. And then at the end of the process, it will dump out any mallocs that didn't have frees. This may have a significant performance overhead, and this is true of just about any native memory leak tracker. So there is no real benchmark because the overhead will be proportional to how many mallocs and frees occur, and that's variable. So the best thing to do is just to test it out in an equivalent test environment, and then you can get a feeling of whether you can run it in production or not. Ideally, if you can reproduce a problem in test, that's the best thing. Slide 36, please. So this is what I would recommend as far as enabling malloc debug. When report allocations is the key thing that enables the reporting of the leaks. And leak is a term that's kind of, it's, be careful when you use that term. I'm even not being very careful because in a lot of cases, for example, the JVM will allocate things at the start of the JVM that it is, by design will not deallocate. There's just no purpose to deallocating it because it needs it for the whole process. There may be other things similarly. And so you may get, but in general, those are not going to be, first of all, those won't be growing. And second of all, they're not going to be massive. And so when you're looking for, at this allocation report, you're looking for change over time or just very large allocations. Whether a single allocation or a group of allocations based on the stack. And on the point of the stack, you can control the stack depth as far as what it will track for each allocation using that option. It's recommended not to go much over three because based on the way the JIT works, this can cause crashes. So there is some risk to malloc debug as well. But if you keep the stack depth low, the risk is very low. The way this works is that it actually tracks these allocations within the virtual memory address space of the process. So that means that if you're already tight on space, this will squeeze it more because for each allocation, it has to track that within the virtual address space. And the amount that it'll use is proportional to the stack size and how much is actually tracked. So if you increase stack depth, you will also increase how much native memory your process will use. Some tech notes and things recommend using the log extended option. I don't recommend this because all it gives you is things like the process ID and thread ID and the time, which I can imagine might be useful, but in most cases, I don't think they're useful. You just really want the stack. And so what this does is this adds overhead and it adds virtual memory requirements. Slide 37, please. So I already mentioned you should avoid a stack depth too much greater than 3. Slide 38, please. This is an example of running with this option. So I've run with this option. I've stopped the JVM, and it will print to standard error all of the allocations, the individual allocations, where they were, how big they were, and the stack. There's a script on that link that can aggregate those by stack, and then the final example is the output of that script, which shows a certain number of bytes leaked by a particular stack. Slide 39, please. If you're gathering malloc debug, recommend gathering periodic system dumps, J-extracting each one. This is useful because if, let's say, your process crashes, you can still extract this allocation database, this leak database, from the system dumps. Also, it lets you do that type of analysis over time so you can see what grew. I'll give an example of that in a few slides. And it's also important to just get some general information on the process. So whether it's SVMon or VMstat, you definitely want to run those. Slide 40, please. To get the, so if you have a system dump and malloc debug was enabled, then you can get a similar output by using the malloc allocation command. And to check if you had malloc debug on or not, in the malloc command at the top, you'll see that the malloc log is enabled and report allocations, which are malloc debug. Slide 41, please. You can do some filtering to check for particular sizes. A few other things here. You can look at the proc for the data size. It's just an alternative. Slide 42, please. Just a few interesting commands if you're doing eye-catcher hunting or you just want to dump some data at an address, a few commands there. You can look for, there's some operating system commands to dump memory or look at some string content in the dump. Slide 43, please. So that covers malloc debug. It's pretty straightforward. The only difficulty really is if you can accept the overhead, whatever that is, and if you can reproduce the problem. A few other commands that may be interesting. We've used these sometimes. So truss is, if you know Linux, it's the equivalent of strace, and it can track system calls. To do this, you need to use a dash script option with start server, and then you can modify the Java command by prepending the truss command. And this is useful if you want to figure out where Java heap is being mmapped. You can, in principle, look at mallocs and frees just to see when they happened, where they were allocated, etc. And this is a pretty low overhead way. You could also just attach truss to a process, and you know, when you, if you're just looking for mallocs and frees, you could then somehow correlate it to other events in the system that occurred. So if you think that the leak is caused by clicking a particular button, well, you can just, you know, attach. If you're just the only person on that JVM, you can see if clicking that button caused the malloc or free. Slide 44, please. Probe view is similar to /dtrace or Linux system tap, and this is, you know, essentially a way to burrow into the various low-level calls and do some interesting things. It's available with AIX 6.1. And I didn't spend a whole lot of time on this. I just wanted to make people aware that it exists and you could look further into it. This is just a quick example I threw together of anytime there's a malloc, get the stack trace and print it out. This would be too much overhead, so you'd have to do some more logic there to track in memory and then print out at the end. Slide 45, please. So that's about it. Native memory issues, there is no simple 1, 2, 3 steps on figuring them out. You kind of have to try things out. There are some very lightweight tools such as Java cores and just OS monitoring that in many cases will help you deeply understand the issue. And malloc debug is a very useful tool. It works very well. It does have some overhead, but you should definitely consider it if you want to prove or disprove a native memory leak. And always consider just understanding what's really happening. So understanding whether it's just through SVMon by looking at the segments or through a system dump, to understand what's happening over time using multiple system dumps or tracking. And then you can use various techniques to just simply avoid the situation. Slide 46, please. These are a few additional links on general WebSphere application server product issues and turn it over to David.
Thank you, Kevin, for a great presentation. And finally, don't forget to connect with us. You can be notified about upcoming webcasts related to the product and topics discussed today by subscribing to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange mailing list. Simply send an email to wsehelp@us.ibm.com with the subject of WSTE Subscribe to get a list of the possible mailing lists. Also, if there's a topic you would like to see scheduled or if you have any comments that would help us improve our future webcasts, please let us know at that same email address. You could also connect with us through our Facebook page and our Twitter account. Talk to us and let us know how we can make this program even better for you. We welcome any ideas that you may have. Thanks again for your participation. At this time, Marcella, we would like to open the lines for questions.
One moment for the first question. Sudhir, your line is open.
Okay. I'd like to know what is the impact, like, if I set it up the synchronous way or asynchronous writes in the WebSphere properties, impact on the native memory. Just I'd like to see what is the impact. And I heard that if I flush it in the Java code, so the data, it won't hold in the native memory. It always flush to the directly to the Java, like, you know, browser. But how can I prove it that?
So on the first question, the asynchronous write type does use more native memory. I don't have any numbers as far as how much. So the best way I would think is just to run a test with the two different write types and just see the difference using SVMon.
Yeah, I did that, but after that, I say, okay, flush it in the Java code, but I want to make sure that, okay, it is flushing everything to the browser, like it's not keeping anything in the native memory. Is there some way I can make sure that?
So do you mean that a JSP or a servlet is calling response.flush?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure that that would really release any native memory because some of it will be pooled, you know, in the web container thread.
Okay.
And so, I mean, there is some, I'm not sure actually as far as if you, let's say, have, you're sending back a 5 megabyte file or something from your JSP, in that case, I think all that will be in the Java heap. So there will be some native usage as far as the transport layer, but I think that'll be constant because it'll go back in pieces.
Still, you think still it will use some native memory when I even though flush it in the code?
If you flush a response, I think the native memory usage, I don't think it will go up or down. I think it'll just stay constant.
Okay.
But, definitely, if you could send me an email with some details, I
sure.
can look into that more.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
Sure.
At this time, sir, we have no one else in the queue. They can still press star 1 if they would like to.
Okay. I'll just cover a few of the things in the group chat. Arthur, in 32 bits, if heap size is increased, the malloc space is reduced. Yes, that's correct, for both 32-bit and 64-bit. But 64-bit, they're so far apart that it's not really that it's reduced or increased. You're just allocating the space differently. But yes, in 32-bit, if you reduce your heap, you've increased your malloc space. In 64-bit, there's just so much space that, if you reduce your heap, your malloc space is still got plenty of space. But in principle, you are also increasing the malloc space. Michael asks, virtual memory is not mapped to physical memory. Is it possible that the total virtual memory used by all applications on a system is bigger than the present physical memory plus swap space? Yes, because if you have shared libraries will count in the virtual address space of each process. However, there's only one copy in RAM. And so your virtual address space is double counting if you're comparing processes or you're looking at the overall system. Nevertheless, it's still, I think, the best way. You know, just you have to keep that fact in mind, but it's still, I think, the best way to track leaks. And John asks, if you run with XMEX larger than 3 gigs, malloc is fixed at 256 megabytes. That's correct. Is there a way to get the object reference's age? So I'm assuming you're talking about native memory, and the only way I can think of would be to track when each native allocation was made. You could do that with Truss or debug malloc with the extended option, but I can't imagine, you know, be useful if you can give some more details, because I don't see how that would be useful. How effective do you think SVMon is compared to malloc debug? So SVMon is certainly much lower overhead. It will give you an accurate view of whether native memory is increasing or not. That may or may not be a leak. For example, over time, a Java process will continuously, up to certain limits, will just-in-time compile heavily used code. So you will see growth of native memory over time. That is expected. However, obviously, if you're running into any limits, you need to figure out whether that growth is because of a leak or it's just because you're squeezed by something else. But malloc debug is also a good way, or system dumps are good ways to track exactly how much native memory is used, and so from that you can explore if that's a leak or expected. Ken asks, what happens if you set the min heap equal to the max heap? So as far as native memory, it doesn't matter. Native memory, when you start the JVM, whatever your max heap is, the JVM will reserve that amount, will essentially mmap that amount of space. So if your min heap is lower than XMX, as far as the total virtual memory allocated, it doesn't matter. However, what's resident in physical memory may change depending on if the heap is smaller. Next question, from your experience, do you have any numbers on differences in native memory usage between WAS versions? For example, is WAS 7 using more than WAS 6, and how much? And the same for 32-bit or 64-bit. I don't have any numbers on that in my experience. There definitely are some differences between versions, but I haven't seen any massive, hundreds of megabytes difference. The biggest thing I've seen is just the mix of native libraries that customers are using. So Webster Application Server has not too many native libraries. There are things like asynchronous I/O, et cetera. But the larger factor is the JVM itself and how many classes and class footers you use, things like that, or other libraries like database drivers, type 2. I don't see any other questions, but feel free to call in or add to the group chat.
We have no further questions.
Thank you, Marcella. At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and we hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Kevin, for presenting today.
Thanks, everyone.